Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. And sitting here next to me is the rest of the automotive group. To my right is Andy. You're supposed to use your husky voice at this point.
Yeah,
you're
it's always husky.
Oh. I know.
So, good morning, everyone.
And then my wife, Renee, sitting here. You're supposed to say hello.
Oh, good morning. Okay. I was watching you do buttons and getting nervous about what the heck.
We've got him pushing buttons.
Yeah.
And we're
like
supposed
that.
To take our cues and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, we have to watch him like a hawk, don't
listen.
We? Ooh, let's gang up today.
Yeah.
Can we?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Under the hood with Renee and Annie.
Okay, goodbye.
We're
they
still
just.
Here.
Yeah, folks, in my defense, we close the show at 5 or at 59 minutes after the hour. I have to close the taping of that show. I have to name it and save it, which takes a lot of time. Then I have to get ready for the next hour with these two. And they're downstairs at the Coke machine or the coffee machine yakking about junk in the trunk or whatever. And I hardly have enough room to go to the bathroom.
Oh, boy.
So,
yeah, sounds like a personal problem
yeah.
to me.
Yeah, that can be fine with you guys. All righty. So, from the car point of view, if you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Folks, you have to understand, please understand, that I am the focus point for everybody who has a problem that nobody can fix. And there are times that we're... Our infrastructure is taxed to the max with something that comes in that's broken. And I'll give you a good example. A gentleman goes to a repair shop because his transmission is acting up in a really bad and obvious way. And it's acting up 100% of the time. So it's not something that just happens in the morning. The guys go out, open up the hood of the truck. They kind of put it in gear and they do a couple things and they pronounce it's bad and it's an $8,000 transmission. Mm-hmm. So as I explain to people, it's always a good idea to get a second opinion, including our shop. Mm-hmm. It's a good idea. If you don't like if you want, then take our and you insist that the shop write down exactly what it is that they found. This is what we found. This is the symptom we verified. Here's the parts. Here's the labor. Here's the write your check before you leave your truck or your car. Right?
Well, not write your check before you leave your
I'm trying to paint the picture of is this is the end dollar amount as close as we can get.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, because people, for example, Alan had somebody ask him the other day, how much is a motor for this particular car? And he gave him an estimate between 65 and 7. And then the guy said, well, I found somebody who will do it for 38. So he goes there. You know, $3,800. But by the time he gets done, it's $6,800, and the car doesn't work.
And now he, and more than likely, he may not have told us the truth. It may have been the next door neighbor said he'd do it for $3,500.
Right, yeah.
So
exactly.
Now the neighbor is well over his head. He can't fix it.
Right.
And then now he's hunting for somebody to help him fix this big problem.
Yeah.
There's lots of us. That's calling waving the flag or the cape in front of the bull.
Yeah.
You know what
but,
I mean?
But they call around and they are, you know, even to shops and they assume that they're going to give them, you know, out the door price with parts, labor, tax, and half the time not any of that's in there.
They're not comparing apples to apples, and there's just so much to some of the jobs. I mean, it's not easy to call around and get a good, honest quote from anyone on an engine job. I mean,
right.
There's so many different variables, and so, you know, with nobody without looking at it can really give you 100% this is what you're going to pay out the door.
Mm-hmm. You remember where Maury loaned his, I think it was his Land Rover?
Porsche.
It had a Porsche motor in it, but I don't remember exactly what model it was. But he loaned it, or he had his young son take it on the prom or something, and he smoked the motor.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was an $18,000 job. And we bid it at $18,000, and we came in at $18,000, but it had 100,000 miles on it, and we already had the hoses and the belts and the fluids and the coolant and the oil and the filters, the motor mounts. We already had all that stuff in it. Mm-hmm. There's lots of shops just like us. They have the skills and the capability. You guys know about the Ford truck that we've had here for 100 years that had a hole in the piston. Mm-hmm. And so we found a shop down in Sierra Vista that would literally replace the piston, which nobody else does. And they've done it lots of times. Mm-hmm. But they took it and towed it out because they said that they found somebody put a used engine in it for $2,500. Well, it takes $1,100 worth of labor to pull the cab to get to the engine on this Ford truck. It's a diesel. Mm-hmm. So I'm unclear as to how we're going to fit a used engine, the labor to install the engine, take it out and install it, and then remove the cab and put it back on. I'm not even close to that.
Yeah.
So, but you got to remember, too, that 602-508-0960, we're going to get to Dean in just a second. You got to remember, too, that the guy that got, he went to that shop, and literally they did nothing but quoted it for $8,000.
Yeah, like, lifted the hood and I think pulled a code.
Yeah. Yeah,
that, just said shut the hood and said it's a transmission. So. Mm-hmm.
So he said, "Do you want to look at it?" And we said, "We're happy to provide you an alternative symptom analysis." And I think we did charge him a diagnostic charge. And we went in, and they never even pulled a dipstick on this transmission, which is kind of unusual. We found it 3 quarts low on oil. Mm-hmm. And so we put 3 quarts in it, and then it also had this device, which is you unplug a wire harness from a sensor, and you plug in this device in the middle. So now it's kind of a, what would you call it? It's a, I mean, it just escapes my brain right now, but it, like I said, it's just unplug, and then you plug this device in, and you plug it in where that wire was.
Okay.
It changes the pressure on the transmission. So we took that out because we didn't know if that was part of the problem. We put 3 quarts in it, and the transmission absolutely worked perfect. And I think his bill was about $150, $160 by the time we got in with the fluid and all that.
I think it's a known problem with that particular vehicle as well.
And we called Lorenzo, which is our transmission guy, and we talked to him about it because this is what we found. Did we miss anything? And then him and Alan worked on a couple things. Then he looked at this fuel or this line pressure regulator and said, let's take that out and see what happens then. But the fluid fixed almost half of it. So it was an unusual situation when you do that. Dean, good morning, and thank you very much for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2013 Kia Soul with a 2.0-liter engine. Original owner. This vehicle from day one exhibited random rough idle, and it would pop backfire through the intake, and a couple of times it would do that at a steady state of speed with slight tipping on the throttle, and sometimes it would do it from a dead stop that would backfire through the intake. The random rough idle is one that I can't figure out what might be the catalyst. I was thinking it might be sometimes I thought it was maybe the way it was sitting on the driveway, on the incline of the driveway. Sometimes I thought it was a low fuel. Sometimes it wouldn't do it then. Sometimes I thought it was ambient temperature related. Yeah, there's just no rhyme or reason for it. And it's been back to the dealer 4 times with a flight data recorder the last time. They can't figure out what's wrong. One of the ridiculous things that they tried to do is, this is coming from the zone level. They thought it was a motor mount function, and they retorqued all the motor mounts, and they did ridiculous things like that, which was a total waste of time. But that's kind of the essence of what I have.
Well,
how many miles do you have on it?
Right now there's 46,000.
And it's a 2013, you said, Kia Soul?
That's correct. Uh-huh.
Wow.
Well, the backfire bothers me. Okay, the backfire is we have an explosion taking place in one of the cylinders that's out of time. It's gone. It's something's wrong there. So the spark plug, the end of it is glowing bright red, which it should not do. So when the fuel is injected into the cylinder, the spark plug, even though there's no spark, at the end of it's red hot, and it blows up the... Now,
wouldn't you have a check engine light? Or?
Well, you'd think...
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, that there's never any kind of check engine light, when they did the diagnostic, no code showed up. With something as significant as a backfire and, the rough idle condition, they showed nothing, which leads me to believe that perhaps the parameters that they have in the computer are such where they're not picking up some
no.
of those things.
No, you can't draw any conclusion from that. And if you do, you're wrong. So you can't do that because until we find it, then we can determine why the computer didn't pick it up. That's all that happens. You're asking a question or you're assuming that you're, and I'm not going to pile on the dealer, but this is an unusual situation. But I'm thinking if we had a backfire, we would have had a code. That would have been an engine misfire code. That would have been a cylinder contribution code. The cylinder contribution code is after each cylinder fires, there is a jump in the RPM. So if we don't see that jump, or we see the power in a curve kind of deal, up here it's 1, 2, 3, 4 is way up high in the curve, and then all of a sudden we drop down, boom, and then we come back up because the next cylinder hits. So that cylinder contribution, all that stuff. I'm concerned about the backfire because if you have 46,000 miles on it, and a backfire is typically caused by a bad valve. So the intake valve is leaking, so we're backfiring through the intake. That's what he says. So backfiring through the intake after 46,000 miles. Now, keep in mind, 46,000 miles twice around the girth of the earth, and he hasn't burned a valve. There's no way in God's green earth that this thing is going to have a bad intake valve and go 46,000 miles. There's just no way.
But he said it started from the beginning. I mean,
I understand
this.
But I'm working off of his diagnosis when it comes to backfiring.
Right.
That's what he's saying.
Right.
I'm suggesting it ain't a backfire. I'm suggesting somebody has to hear that. I'm suggesting, I mean, people come in all the time with valves ticking and it's an exhaust leak. We see that all the time.
Is it, it's consistent? I mean, it does it daily, it does it all the time, or is it an intermittent issue?
Let me just update a little bit, if I may. The backfiring has ceased to occur, but the random rough idle is still there and it still drives me crazy.
Okay.
I don't know what to make of it.
All right. Well, let me tell you about a random, we had an intermittent, Honda idle the other day. And you know what the answer to that was? Nothing.
Can't wait.
No.
Nothing.
Honda says, we know it's there. We know it's there. And we did make software changes to the model before this 2015. For exactly the same symptoms, but we've not created a software patch for the 2015. Do you know what the fix was? I'm talking to my daughter and my wife. You know what the fix was? I swear to God, this is the truth.
What?
Run your headlights 24/7 or all the time that the car's running. Mm-hmm. When you run the headlights, it creates a voltage change, and the voltage change fixes the stupid random misfire or random rough idle. Believe it or not.
And interesting you say that, because applying the brakes at a dead stop to obviously put a electrical draw, it does make a difference. It makes the RPM go one way or the other.
Okay, the brake pedal, the amp draw in the brake pedal is one noodle. The amp draw in the headlights is 20. So while I understand that you're saying that there's an electrical thing, I just want you to drive with your headlights on, okay? But you can't leave them on. You can put them in automatic if you want, but I need you to turn on your headlights manually and drive it and see what happens. Now, we haven't figured out this ourselves, but we did figure out about the headlights. If we create a draw, Eddie went out and drove it, and when he turned the air conditioning on, and the problem went away. So then we're going, wow, an electrical change. So you're normally idling along at 12.8, 12.8, 13.2 voltage, but when you turn the air on and get a lot, and when you turn the headlights on asking for a lot, then that thing goes up to 13.8, 13.9, and 14 volts because the alternator's fired up about that. Brake lights are a different story. I don't know. I can't fix your car, but if you can duplicate this, I don't know why you wouldn't file for a lemon law car. If they've got a problem, and it has to be a safety-related issue, and I'm not quite sure a random rough idle would accomplish that.
You know, Mark, I did try to do that after the flight data recorder attempt by the dealership to figure out what was going on with this thing, and it failed. In fact, when the zone people went for a ride with me and the car did its thing where it exhibited the rough idle, they popped the hood and started checking the spark plug integrity or the spark plug wire integrity of the plug to make sure that everything, that there was nothing funny going on. So they knew there was a problem, but they denied that. And that, I'm kind of butthurt about that. And I think I had a good case, just kind of what you're kind of suggesting. And as far as the course of
All right. Okay. Okay. Stop. We understand that, but what you don't understand is I've dealt with lemon law cases for 20 years, and remember I said safety? Remember I said that word safety? That's a big deal. It's how you present it. And when they open up the hood to look at spark plug wires, unless you have a spray bottle with water in your hand, you might as well just be peeing your pants. It doesn't really make much sense. We need to generate the spark in order to do that. And if it was a spark plug problem, we would have a cylinder misfire code. So I don't think, and of course we've gone from a backfire to an intermittent rough idle at 46,000 miles. This could be a throttle plate cleanup. This could be an EGR problem. There's lots of things that this could be that are simple as let's disable the EGR and let's drive it for a while with no EGR. And we know we're going to get a code on the EGR, but we don't care. But if disconnecting the EGR and plugging the vacuum line with a golf tee or a pencil, then it goes away. Then all of a sudden we're halfway home. So that's kind of what it's all about. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Now, hang on just a minute. Stop pointing at my paperwork, you guys. I got buttons to push, the speakers to kill, the microphones to start up.
You're kind of crabby this morning.
I am, but I've got so many people telling me what to do. And really and truly, in my defense, we need to stick to the symptoms, okay? We need to stick to the symptoms. The flight recorder stuff and all that stuff doesn't help me. It doesn't help me. I don't know what the flight recorder said, neither do you. And when we go through that transition of we're talking symptoms, and then I'm going to ask questions because this is a give-and-take kind of show, mm-hmm. okay? So you tell us what you got, and then I ask questions. But that's we need to be able to and the best question answer that we rarely get is, I don't know.
Okay.
And that's a good one. I like to hear I don't know every once in a while just so I know. Just so I know.
Okay. I was going to say just, we need to go
okay.
to that.
Okay. Again, somebody tell me. Strictly Diesel. Strictly Diesel. And I saw Nate this weekend at a thing. Nate is a great guy. He works on diesels. He works on all kinds of diesels, domestic and light, foreign and domestic, as well as light diesel. He doesn't do the big trucks. He's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. And they also sell parts and stuff like that on the internet at their website. So you can actually go into their website and look for symptoms and stuff like that, as well as parts if you think that you want to hot rod your diesel or you want to customize your diesel, then Strictly Diesel is a great place to go. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak, and let's zip on over to Stephanie. Stephanie, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. Well, I'm just a weird sort of a frustrated old lady, and my husband and I are not... I just wanted to know if you can give me an answer that's logical to me. I have a 1998 Toyota Avalon. It has currently 242,000 miles, which is superfluous information, as you said. At 187,723 miles, I had to replace the alternator.
Okay.
50,000 miles later, or 40-some-odd thousand miles later, they're telling me my alternator, 54,000 miles later, they're telling me my alternator has gone out. The battery light came on the dashboard. I didn't check in my manual. I probably should have. The battery is a year and a half old. Took it over to Sears. Sears tested the battery, said it was okay. They said the alternator is not charging. And I'm thinking, how can one alternator last 187,723 miles and the next one only lasts 54,540 miles? Is there possibly something else we need to be looking for?
Well, I don't, with all due respect, I don't think that's the question at all.
Okay.
Because, first of all, we have to get to the point where we fix a problem with a new alternator, and then we can ask that question. Let me ask you some questions. How many times have you had to jump start your car?
Ever in all 20 years?
No, not ma'am. Just since this alternator situation's come up.
No, since the battery light came on,
yes.
We have not had to jump start it.
Okay. Did Sears is the one that checked the alternator?
Yeah, they checked the battery. It was a Sears battery. So okay. Since the battery light came on, I took it and they checked the battery, said it was okay.
No,
the
I know
alternator
that.
Was not charging.
My question was, did Sears do the alternator test as well?
Yes.
Okay. So they said the battery's okay and the alternator's bad. Did they give you any parameters? Did they give you any specific parameters?
No, okay. My husband did it, so I don't know.
Okay, your husband took it to Sears. Is that what I hear?
Yeah.
You? Okay. Yeah. Well, 50,000 miles is two times around the Earth, and that's really a long period of time. In the old days, alternators, when they first came out, they didn't last 10,000 miles, 20,000 miles at all. The alternator that you had installed, its life depends on where it came from. If it came from a rebuilder, there's rebuilders out there, and the alternator has about 10 parts in it that cause wear. So if he goes in and he looks at the old alternator and it only needed a front bearing, then he would put a front bearing in it, put it in his box, and send it out the door. He's saying to himself, the diode trio, the regulator, the rear alternator, the brushes, the rear alternator bearing, the brushes, those are all okay. And he's hoping that alternator will go through the warranty process. But there's other rebuilders that will do both front and rear bearings. They do the alternator trio, and they do the regulator, and they do the brushes. They do everything. So as you go through that, there's a big difference in price. So I don't know what the price was in the first one, and I don't know what the spread was on the alternator. I can tell you that the alternator can be spread out from $60 to $150 on a rebuilt alternator, the same part number. So I can buy them for $60, but I don't. And I can buy them for $100 and sell them for $125, and I prefer to do that. So I think we need a second opinion. The battery light just indicates there's a battery issue. But what bothers me the most is someone's condemned your alternator and you're still driving the car and you haven't had to jump start it, and that doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, so I haven't driven it much, but let me just give you some information that may help you or not. I don't want to add to your burden of being driving you crazy. In August of 2012, I paid $380.99 for an alternator, which in my mind, and knowing me, I don't like rebuilt parts, so I probably had him buy a new Toyota part, would be my guess. Mm-hmm. He also replaced the PS belt, the power steering belt, and the alternator belt.
Okay.
That was the one that got $54,000, and I heard you say what you said about the life of them, but I'm still scratching my head as to how the first one got 187,000 miles on it before I needed a new one. So you're saying, I hear you saying, to go get a second opinion, and?
Well, no, you hear me saying is I don't understand why you haven't jump-started your car. I don't understand why everybody's jumping to the conclusion that you have a bad alternator just because you have a battery light on. And I don't. I want you to know that there's no such thing as a Toyota alternator. The cheapest bidder bid the alternator, and Toyota doesn't make parts for your Toyota. They assemble your car from parts from all over the world. And actually, your alternator is either made by Hitachi or Denso, and I can buy both of those alternators.
Right.
The $300 indicates that it is on the high end of the alternator spectrum, but I think you need a second opinion. What part of town do you live in?
62nd Street in Thunderbird.
Then I would go see Tom over at Thunderbird Auto at 88th and Thunderbird. And I would tell Tom that I have a battery light on, and that's all I would tell him. If he asks you further, I would suggest that you say to him that you haven't had to jump start your car since the battery light came on. Toyotas do have a habit, and I'm going to have to finish my sentence because I got to take a break. But on the other side of this break, I'll finish my sentence. Thank you for holding. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. If you have a question, that's the number. There's four lines open. I'm going to go back to Stephanie real quick. And Stephanie, let me kind of just recap. I'm bothered that you haven't had a dead battery. I also know that Toyotas, and I don't know that this applies to yours, I kind of doubt it, but I can't tell you how many dash lights we used to fix on Toyotas by replacing the choke relay. So I don't really know how the choke relay has anything to do with your alternator, but the fan belt can be slipping. We can have a bad battery connection. You could truly have a bad alternator. But again, we're asking questions that are best answered after the car's fixed. So once we get the battery light off, once we determine what's wrong with it, then those questions that you're asking, why did it only last 54,000 miles, those are going to be answered. Part of the diagnostic process is going and find out what's wrong. So if we go in and find out that the regulator's running wild or the diode trio is blown up, then that's the answer. The answer is this electronic part failed. But you know, if you spent $300 on the alternator and it only lasts 54,000 miles, wouldn't it be a good idea to just go back to the shop and at least ask them if there's any consideration towards the alternator?
Sure.
Sure, I will.
Okay. So you can go ask. Now, if you're a good customer of that shop, Andy, if somebody, one of our customers came in and had, we put an alternator at 54,000 miles, at $300 alternator, and they were a customer that had been in on a regular basis, what might you say to them?
Yeah, I would definitely look into the situation, check for warranty consideration, check with the manufacturer or the, you know, vendor and see, you know, kind of where they're willing to help, where we're willing to help, and I don't think it's out of the question.
And so likewise, the menu's kind of wide open in the sense that it might very well sound like this in a hypothetical situation. The manufacturer's going to cover the alternator, but they're not going to cover the diagnostic and the replacement. Mm-hmm. So if you'll pay the diagnostic and replacement, I'll get you another $300 alternator for nothing, right?
Sure.
That could be it. The alternator manufacturer could also say, I'll cut the price in half. So at that particular point, I'm going to give you another alternator for $150.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the marketing strategies that could or could not work.
And sometimes they'll warranty the alternator for you, but then not give you an additional warranty. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
You know, that's a possibility, too. If they say, hey, we're going to cover this, no charge to you, you only pay the labor, but you don't have it's not another 1 year, 2 year, 3 year warranty kind of a thing.
We're just going to pick up, but we're not going to start the warranty over because you didn't pay for the alternator.
Sure.
I'm giving you a new one.
Mm-hmm.
I would call Tom over at Thunderbird Auto, and I would say to him, I have a battery light on your Toyota, your Avalon. I'm still on that.
Yeah.
So... I would say to him, can you give me some diagnostic parameters to diagnose this? Really and truly, we need to go in to our software and find out what triggers the light. And it could be something like a loose fan belt. It could be something like a bad connection, or it could be a volt drop problem. So those are the tests that have to run. I'm guessing from an electrical systems test, what's a battery alternator regulator test cost? Approximately,
I would say anywhere from maybe $30 to $50.
I would agree. And a little bit of money to go look at the battery light scenario, look at a wiring diagram, might drive it up to $75.
Yeah.
And that, but then here's the good news. If the guy goes in and says, I'm going to fix your car and this is the cost, and he doesn't fix the car, then he guessed with your money and you turn around and say, I want to unwind this deal.
Mm-hmm.
So you're forcing the guy who diagnoses it to sit down hard on his diagnosis, and you're saying to him, I don't want to pay for a guess. So at the end of the day, I want the battery light off. I want to know why. And you can perhaps answer, why did this alternator only last at 55,000
miles? The other thing, too, I think an alternator to last 187,000 miles is a very long
unusual.
Time.
Yeah.
That's very unusual. So... it's great that it did last that long, but that's not something that we see every day by any means. So you definitely got your money's worth on that first one.
And I think you would agree that we typically do hard parts about every 100,000 miles. So we're doing complete air conditioning and compressors. We're doing alternators. We're doing brakes 3 or 4 times in 100,000 miles. We're doing wiper motors oftentimes at 100,000 miles. We've got lots of things, starters, those kinds of electronic devices. They've been around the world 4 times, and they've been started and stopped maybe a million times.
Yeah.
So that has everything to do with it. But Tom at Thunderbird has the ability to diagnose this and determine why the light's on. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it has nothing to do with the alternator. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that this has something completely different. So under the best of condition, it might be a blown fuse, or it might be a loose fan belt or a bad connection to the battery, and those are real cheap. Okay, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Action Auto is at I-17 I-17 in Deer Valley. I'm looking at something and I'm trying to talk at the same time. I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom, I've known him for many, many years. He's been in that area since 1983. One of the good things is he's got master certified technicians. That's called ASE Master. I am one as well. But he's also got a BMW extraordinaire guy there. So if you have a Beamer and you're looking for an independent shop to help you with your Beamer, then Tom at Action Auto would be a great guy. But if you live in the Deer Valley or North Phoenix area and you don't have a shop, then perhaps stop by, get an oil change, and then you can determine on whether you're going to be a good fit. So that's Tom at Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, and we'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, except for Terry. 602-508-0960. Okay, I've got a couple of comments from other technicians that I respect. Okay, one of them says, the Kia guy that had a rough idle, mm-hmm. and I think the rough idle had been for 46,000 miles, or randomly rough. Is that a fair representation?
Yeah, I think he had a backfire first, and then it kind of went to, yeah.
A rough idle. Did the Kia guy say anything about the idle changing when applying the brake? If so, what about a leaky brake booster? Okay, so when you apply your power brakes, if there's a leak in the system, the vacuum leaks out and it causes the engine to run lean, and then it misfires, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But that's not really what he said. We were talking about the Honda that we just recently tracked backwards, and an increase in electrical stuff mm-hmm. would cause it. He said that it got better when he applied the brakes, not worse.
Yeah,
all right, so there. And then we've also, he says, another guy chimes in and says, on the Toyota, I've had several people complain about the battery icon eliminated in their display, only to find out that they had mistaken it for low coolant. They look very similar. I've seen several batteries and a couple of alternators replaced because of the low coolant light.
On the Toyota?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean, that doesn't actually, it doesn't surprise me in the sense that people come in all the time and they have zero clue as to what the light
means.
They know they have a light on, or they'll say it's a check engine light and it's a TPMS light, or, I mean, we have a chart at our shop when people are like, there's a light on, I don't know, it looks like, you know, the TPMS, a lot of them have the exclamation points with the little parentheses around them or something like that, so... You know, that's how we kind of describe it, but people come in and have no clue. We have a diagram that says, okay, which one of these 15 lights looks like
light.
The one you're talking about?
And even more important than that is does the light come on every time you get in the car and start it? Because then the technician is responsible for identifying the light. I want to tell you something funny real quick, and then we're going to go to the phones. A lady wrote in, and she said, there's a light on my dash with a guy sitting on a toilet.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
It's a -4,
mm-hmm.
and it looked exactly what she said. And it was a temperature, and it said that the outside temperature was -4.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at that -4, it looks just like a guy sitting on the toilet. And it was not, we're not laughing at her, we're laughing with her, because she nailed it.
It did look like that.
It looked just like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
bet that wasn't on our chart. Do you think, Andy?
Probably not.
Matt.
Anyway, so it's an interesting. I'm going to read it again. Several people complain about a battery icon, only to find out they had mistaken it for the low coolant icon. They can look very similar. I've seen several batteries and a couple of alternators replaced because of low coolant. The message there is this. Look in your owner's manual first to see what the doggone light's supposed to be.
That would make sense why she didn't have to get jump started, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, low coolant is altogether different. But the most important thing is let the shop tell you what the light talks about,
mm-hmm.
because we have that ability. So we're a little bit more seasoned than you know, some of the people with respect to identifying the appropriate light.
Yeah, but if it's an intermittent light, you know, and she comes in and says the battery light's coming on intermittently, so then automatically you would go looking towards electrical system tests. And if, to their defense, if they've never seen it on and they're just going based off of what she's saying, you're only good as your information.
Right.
So if she's giving them bad information, they're searching one direction, and it's completely not that that's the case with the lady with the Avalon, but
it's true. However, you know that there's a bulb check, so when you turn your ignition key on but you don't start it, all the dash lights light up for about 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're supposed to count them to make sure that all of them are on, but all the lights are illuminated, so if you say to the customer, walk outside, turn the key on, tell me which one it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's this one over here in the corner. Perfect.
I don't think mine does that. It's got that one of those button starts. I don't think my lights come on when I first hit it.
Well, you know, the reason why that probably is because you own an F car, and our family is,
and
you are the
so
only
good,
person.
It doesn't mean no lights ever go on.
Yeah, you broke the tradition of my family for 190 years.
Oh, boy. Again.
And we were Chevrolet and GM people, and you bought the
and
very
what do
first
you drive?
Ford.
Yeah, really.
A Dodge.
So there you go.
And what did you own? A Suzuki.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, everyone, he owned a Suzuki Grand Vitara.
There
and
you
I
go.
Actually drove it, and he had it too.
too.
You're true.
Right.
It's true.
So,
we towed it behind the motorhome.
Don't blame me
for
being the first one.
We towed it behind the motorhome.
And I think our motorhome was a Ford as well. So.
And we had, and yeah, you trusted OF motorhome to take you cross country?
That's right.
That's probably why I got traded in.
Okay.
And you had a Suzuki Samurai.
That's right.
The awesomest car of all time.
You guys done?
No, what else can we talk about?
We need to go to Terry, okay?
Okay.
All right, code your laughter. Terry, how can we help? How can the girls help you?
They're going to help me. Thanks for taking my call. And this, maybe I will go purchase the Ford after you give me the answers.
That's right.
Okay.
I have, this is a follow-up of last week whenever someone called in about the design of the new Camaro.
Okay.
So I have a 2010.
Okay.
And with that fuel tank, they said that, you know, with the fuel, you put it on the passenger side where you put the fuel in.
Right.
Recently, I had a light bulb go out on my turn signal. So this goes with the lights, too.
Mm-hmm.
I take this thing, it's repaired, and I come out of there spending over $200 because they have to dismantle that whole back end of that car to put a light in. I come from that generation where you went down to the store, you buy a light bulb, unscrew it, put it back in, and on you, you're on the road again.
Okay.
Yeah. Is this just General Motors? That's my question.
No.
And then I talked to people with Cadillac. They said, well, you're lucky you don't have a Cadillac. You'd have spent $300 to $400.
We've seen headlight bulbs that are hundreds of dollars. It's not GM. It's across the board. We joke at work because we say they should tell consumers the cost of repairs before they buy these cars, because just like in your case, I mean, if I heard to replace a taillight bulb or a turn signal bulb or a brake bulb was $200, I'd be like, eh, I'm okay. I'm okay not having that car.
Yeah. That's where I'm coming from. I think at times in my life when it would have been difficult for me to repair that.
Yeah.
Sure. You had small children that, and in some states you have it, you know, you have inspections where the turn signals have to work,
mm-hmm.
where you don't get your license.
Okay, sure. Are you guys all done? Can I answer his question?
Okay.
No, we really don't want you to answer.
Okay. All right.
Anyway.
All right. Here's the deal. First of all, last week we were talking about why do they put the gas filler on the passenger side or
Correct.
The driver's side?
Correct.
And everybody was guessing.
Okay.
But we agreed afterwards that the catalytic converters are underneath the driver's compartment. So the catalytic converters that get very, very hot and can set the fumes on fire and gasoline are way far forward. We don't know the answer to that. So that's what he was alluding to. As far as this taillight assembly, let me ask you a question. It was the entire bill $200?
It was like $200, and I think the light bulb was just $14.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I think my total bill was $260.
Okay, yep. And the reason I ask you that is we do lots of taillight assemblies because the ground is missing on the taillight or the brake light. And so sometimes that entire assembly, it takes a lot to get it out, but that dominates the cost, and that's the reason why I ask him.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is that, like Andy said, this is something we deal with. We did a Honda not too long ago to get to a headlight bulb, and it was a couple $100 to dig the front bumper off this thing.
Yeah, some of them have to be, you have to remove the, or that's what it says, is you have to remove the front bumper cover to access headlights. It just seems so crazy. I understand we deal with it all the time, but that's the way these cars are being made.
But those kinds of really difficult things don't represent but maybe 20% of the cars, 30% of the cars. It's not every car, and it's certainly not half of every car.
No.
But it is specific to the brand, though, a lot.
Yeah, we're seeing it more and more, I think, on some things that used to be quote-unquote simple, you know, back in the day. I mean, you lift hoods up these days, and the engine covers, there's so many engine covers covering the engine compartment that it can take a half an hour just to take the engine covers off to even access anything.
And in dollar amount, depending on their labor rate, that's $50 to $65, $70 just to take them off and put them back on.
Sure.
So we see that a lot. In defense of those, we had someone that said that they needed $200 to get the headlight bulb. Eddie, one of our technicians, took out the water jug and then was able to move a harness and reach in there, because he has really, well, he's a small guy.
Yeah.
And he has very feminine hands.
I was just going to say, you are going to really offend him.
I know I am, but he's, you know what? He's tough.
But a lot of people wouldn't have that small. They wouldn't
Absolutely.
Be able to do it.
Well, and his experience and his expertise to know to, hey, let's remove this washer bottle. We can access it this way. Most people, A, aren't going to do that.
Right.
And just aren't going to take that extra time and that extra care and step to, you know,
save
accommodate
you
the customer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's fine. And likewise, a guy could do it the shortcut and bill the long cut.
Of
okay.
Course.
So that happens a lot. Yeah. But here's something else. Not too long ago, there was a headlight bulb, and the customer took a big hole saw, about a 3-inch, 4-inch hole saw, and the plastic inner fender liner,
mm-hmm.
and just drilled a hole
mm-hmm.
in there, reached up, did the taillight, and then he took a piece of metal and he riveted where he cut the hole. And he was done. And he says, I saved myself $200 or $300. I'm not quite sure I want you to do that to a customer's car without their permission, Andy.
No, we wouldn't be doing that. Yeah.
Without their permission, but that happens.
But yes, anyway. Terry, to answer your question, that is not
all the time.
Yeah, not unheard of, unfortunately.
All righty, 602-508-0960.
Troy.
Okay, 602-508-0960. Troy, you're up. How can I help you?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a 2004 Toyota Corolla, and from what I understand, this has a timing chain instead of a timing belt. Is
yes,
that
sir.
Correct.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if there's a number of miles that you recommend having the timing chain changed. I know.
But tell me, I'm not worried about the time. If it had a rubber belt, my personal opinion is 100,000 miles, we do a rubber timing belt.
Uh-huh.
As far as the mechanical chain is concerned, it's not a time issue because the thing doesn't wear out because it's sitting in your driveway, baking in the hot driveway or hot garage. How many miles have you got on your 04?
I think it's about 98,000 right now.
Okay. I'll tell you what I would do. I would do the timing chain when we have to work on the front of the motor. So if we had to add an oil leak at the front of the motor, or if we have to go in and dig the water pump out of there, or if we got the timing cover leaking oil, or the front seal on the crankshaft leaking oil, I would do the chain then. But I want to answer your question specifically. Most of the time, the chain will have so much slop in it that it may set a check engine light, or it may start slapping the cover, and we can actually hear that. And then when you drop a camera down inside there, you can actually see where the chain is starting to wear a what's it called, like a railroad track kind of thing.
Indentation
in the inside of the aluminum cover. Now, when you change the oil and you pull the drain plug, if all of a sudden you see small flakes of aluminum coming out of the oil drain hole, then you better be looking at the timing cover. I would think that I wouldn't want to go past the 175 or 200,000 mile mark.
2 minutes.
I think you're going to have a noise or some metal in the oil to warn you. But my comfort zone is 175 to 200. Then I think you should do it in that range.
Yeah, typically they're not. The timing belts are on intervals, so whether it's 60 or 100 on intervals, but timing change, you don't replace them unless you're having other symptoms like the noise he's talking about or some other issue. They're not a maintenance item that you replace on intervals.
And that's a good point. There's nothing in there that says this mileage. Now, there's a lot of parts on your cars that's that way. The starter's
sure.
not replaced on mileage. The alternator's not replaced on mileage. The master cylinder's not replaced on mileage. The booster's not replaced on mileage. There's lots. But I think too, that the driver oftentimes brings the car in for a noise. And with a little stethoscope and with a little bit of gray hair, we'll be able to find that with no problem.
So if you're not having any issues, I wouldn't do anything at this point.
I would agree with that. Thank you, Troy. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you have a car question, you've got one experienced mechanic and two women that think that they know everything about cars because they've worked around me for the last, how many years? 20?
Too long.
Too long.
39.
Yeah. Okay. All right. 39 years. Kurt's Automotive is on I-17 in Bell, and he's a good shop. And the reason why I know that is because I've sent people to him because they geographically live close to him. Kurtz has pulled the rabbit out of his proverbial hat so many times because he's the one that a lot of times says it's not the $8,000 repair, it's really a $400 repair. That doesn't happen all the time, but at Kurtz, he's smart enough to be able to figure that out. Man, they're really pleasant people, and they do good work, and they do maintenance and all that other stuff. So if you live near I-17 and Bell, the northeast corner, that's Kurtz Auto. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting to my right is Andy Salem, my daughter. She's been in our business for a very, very long time, in excess of 20 years. She actually runs the operation. She's in a position of authority, and the only person that she doesn't have any authority over is me.
That's debatable.
Exactly.
And sitting next to her is my wife, and she's been at my side, partnering with me in the car repair business for 39 years. Mm-hmm. And we've worked together. But I will tell you that the only one of the three of us that has dirty fingernails is me.
So, since when?
Yours look pretty clean to me.
Exactly.
That's
looks like you just got a fresh mani. Let's check your toes. He's probably been hiding in the salon somewhere.
Right. We haven't seen him much this week, have we? Yeah. There you go.
People, I need to tell people, there's no one that's been able to touch my toes in my whole life. So you're thinking I'm going to go and stick my feet in water and have a little fish bite my, chew my skin off?
You've been watching way too much TV.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have those people?
Yeah, they do, those people, but
you have to seek them out because they're not just everywhere.
Yeah, not every corner has, you know, fish that eat dirty. Flesh-eating fish at their local salon.
So this is no longer Under the Hood. It's Comedy Central with Renee and Andy.
Hey, I think you get off on way too many things, too, and you brought it up.
All I said was to draw the picture that I'm in the trenches and you guys are handling the money and the books and all that other kind of stuff.
Well, we just called your bluff because I don't think that's the truth. So.
Let me ask you a question. How many people have you fired?
Oh, that has nothing to do with who's in the trenches.
Have you fired?
Quite a few.
Yeah.
And more and more recently, thank you.
No.
And you might be my next one. Just keep pushing it.
Go ahead. Have as much fun as you want.
But we are.
Can I do a brought to you by right
now? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Thompson's Auto Repairs in Mesa. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma are exactly the kind of people you would hope that would be your neighbors. They're givers. They're not takers. They're nice people. They know right from wrong. They come from a family I'm very familiar with. I know the Thompson family, and I know the Vivian family, and I have since 1968. So I can tell you, these kids are good stock. They are good people, and they know, like I said before, they know the difference from right from wrong. They're the only shop in Mesa that I tell you to go to. The rest of them haven't been able to pass the muster. They haven't been able to fit within the parameters that I set. So if you're in Mesa, they're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and they've been around since 1970. So let's go to the phones and talk with, Greg. Hang on just a second, Greg. 602-508-0960. Lines are open. 602-508-0960. And, Greg, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2008 Suburban, and it's when we first started up in the morning, only when it's been sitting, it sounds like the valves are making a clicking sound. And I was told by one of the mechanics for an unrelated repair that's just, the newer Suburbans are louder because of the manifold. I guess it's and that was his answer to me, so I don't know if that's something I should have checked out.
Yes, I think you should have it checked out, but I've never heard of that answer before, so I don't understand. I can tell you this much. The clicking noise could be an exhaust leak. I want to tell you that even technicians have to work hard. Not have to work hard. They have to do certain tests to determine whether or not it is an exhaust leak. Because when you first start it up, there is no gasket in the exhaust manifold, and so you're likely to have a tick, 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 tick. But once we swell it with heat, then it goes away. Now, you can have both manifolds dropped off and you can put gaskets in there because it's a small block Chevy, more than likely, or we can find exhaust gaskets for it and put them back in. But first we have to diagnose it. Now, if you wanted to do it yourself, then you'd open up the hood, and you would get your wife involved, and you'd give her some big canvas gloves and a big rag. And then when you started it up, she would go around the back and stuff that thing over the exhaust pipe. Now, the exhaust isn't going to be hot first thing in the morning. So at that particular point, you're standing on the driver's side and the passenger side with about 3 feet of heater hose, and you put part of it in your ear, and then you start waving it around the exhaust manifolds. And you're going to hear the tick-tick-tick noise with that long stethoscope device, you know, a piece of 3/4-inch heater hose that's 3 or 4 feet long. Now, if it's a lifter noise, then the question is which side? And we probably ought to pull the valve cover and take a look at it, because it might have pulled the stud out of the head, or it may have mushroomed the push rod, or there may be some issue with respect to the clatter. There's also in your 10-year-old car, there's some piston slaps we call skirt slap. And the easiest way to diagnose that is to change the oil and run it 1,000 miles, pull an oil sample. You can do this yourself. Send it in. There's plenty of places on the Internet. And we're looking at metal content of that sample. Then we do another oil analysis 1,000 miles later, and we do another sample. And if the aluminum number went from 25 to 50 or 25 to 100, then, yeah, we're probably scraping off some of the skirt on the piston. On the other hand, if it stays at 25, 25, 25, 25, then we know it's not aluminum, and then we can move on from there.
So, yes, I would definitely have it checked out.
Yeah, you need to look at it, because if it is a lifter problem, and like I said before, they sound alike, then, yes, you should have that checked out and obviously leave it over. You can also, if you want, put some thicker oil in it. You could run some 30 weight in there, and if you change the noise, if you just run a straight 30 weight in there, then it is something inside the engine. On the other hand, if it doesn't change the noise, then it's not. It's going to probably be an exhaust leak.
And I can rule out the exhaust by just doing that test.
Now, another thing you could do is pull the cover off the throttle body on that, and you could start it up. And now this is where you're going to have to get your buddy, because your wife's going to be really mad at you. We're going to take a couple of teaspoons of power steering fluid or transmission fluid, and we're going to dribble that into the motor. Somebody's going to be holding the idle up. So inside the car, you put your wife with all the windows rolled up. You get your buddy in the back. And as soon as that thing starts belching white smoke, he covers the exhaust.
Okay.
And then you're going to see that white smoke coming out of the exhaust manifold where it mates up to the head.
Oh, okay.
All right?
If there's a leak.
There's a leak. That's exactly right.
Okay. Fantastic.
Okay.
I appreciate your help.
You betcha. Good luck to you. Okay. And that's kind of what we would do. Those are the kinds of things that we do. We even use heater hose for that kind of stuff if they don't have a real stethoscope. And there's times that we will cause it to smoke a lot and follow the smoke. Todd, good morning to you. What you got?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you I went by S&S Tires this morning in Peoria. Jason Hayes, the manager over there.
Uh-huh.
Excellent job. Did what needed to be done. And completely happy with them. Just wanted to tell you congrats on your one of your referrals.
Yeah, one of my best shops. Now, what did you go in there for? Did you go in there for a symptom or for service?
Symptom.
Okay.
2009 F-150.
Okay.
And I drove back from Laughlin the other day, stopped at my daughter's. It sat for about an hour, and when I went to crank it, it just cranked, and didn't catch.
Okay.
And did that 4 or 5 times, and let it set for a little longer, and then it caught. And it hadn't done it since. But what they found in the diagnostic was they found a little bitty fuse in the, I guess, fuel pump?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like it. It's crazy.
Okay.
But they fixed that free of charge, and was just, you know, part of the diagnostic and stuff. And, you know, we talked about some other things that needed to be done.
Okay.
And, gave me a complete list of what needed to be done.
Right, parts and labor and stuff.
Plugs, that kind of stuff.
And you bring up a good point, because sometimes it's $90 to find it and $1 to fix it. Not too long ago, we had a big Suburban Escalade came in and it had lost all of its seat movement, his mirror movement, all that kind of stuff. The steering column, the pedal movement, lost all of that. And we tracked it down to a body control module fuse, and the minute we touched the fuse, everything worked. So we pulled the fuse out, and the contacts were corroded really bad. And this is on the left side of the dash, and I suspect somebody had spilled something on the left side of the dash. So we washed everything up real good, put a new fuse in there, took a little emery cloth. We borrowed it from one of the girls, a little emery file. What do they call that thing?
Nail file.
Nail file. Cleaned up the contacts.
Well, we borrowed it from you, actually,
exactly.
Don't we?
We got it out of your drawer.
Yeah, yeah.
Out of his toolbox.
I want to tell you something. If there's ever been...
I just didn't
want to
say it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You can say it.
Hey, if anybody ever finds my DNA on a fingernail file, I'll give them $1,000.
Oh, deal!
I can find about 10.
Well, we'll be $500 richer next week.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You guys can do whatever you want, but you're not going to find my DNA on anything.
Don't do an autopsy on those fish, right?
Yeah. That's a good idea, too.
I like you, Todd.
Say goodbye to Todd, because he's going.
No, thanks for taking the time to call and say something nice, because we don't hear that every day, so yeah. I'm sure we appreciate it, and S&S does, too.
Oh, you know, it
is. I've been to Kurt's, and I've been to S&S, and had great with both of them.
Great.
Thank
deal.
You. Thank you very much. And that's what we're all about. On our website, we have the very best car shops in Phoenix, and here's my promise to you. This is how serious we are about this. Here's my promise. If you have a problem with one of my shops, then you're going to file a complaint with the Better Business Bureau. If at the end of the day the Better Business Bureau instructs the shop to give you your money back or to effect a repair and the shop refuses, Mark Salem and family will. We'll pay that bill up to $5,000 or we'll fix your car up to $5,000. So bottom line is we're putting our money where our mouth is. So if you want to look at the list of best car repair shops, go to MarkSalem.com and click the best. And, Andy, how many times have we paid any money in those kinds of circumstances?
I don't know. None that I can even recall.
Not ever. Yeah. We've never entered. We came close not too long ago,
right. But
that settled. The shop stood up and took care of it. But in reality, we've never had anything that went that far through the Better Business Bureau. And the reason I'm having you go through the Better Business Bureau is this. I've been involved with the Phoenix Better Business Bureau for probably 25 years. I helped create and write the parameters for the Auto Advisory Committee. I know that's a fair process. So I have trust in their dispute resolution process. I have trust in their ability to know right from wrong. And so I'm willing to accept whatever they say. And that makes a difference. Okay, the lines are open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And you'll know that a lot of times when I refer callers to a particular shop in their geographical area, you can bet that that shop's on my best car repair shops list. Every once in a while, we'll refer somebody of a specialist nature that's not on our list. But most of the time they're on our list. Again, MarkSalem.com. We'll be back right after this. For those of you that are interested, my wife is sitting here. She's kind of in the coach section of the plane. Andy's with her. She's my daughter. She actually runs the company, so she's the co-pilot. And between the two of them, they've been really kind of mean to me today. But anyway, if you guys would like to take the next caller, go ahead. Her name is Julie.
Julie, how can we help you today?
I have a 2012 Buick Enclave, and when I turn the key off, it sounds like the engine is still running. So I thought maybe it was the fan that was still running. So I checked the antifreeze, and the container is kind of empty. So I fill it up to the line, and so I thought, good. So the next day I drove it 7 miles, and I turned it off, and it's still doing the same thing.
Okay. You know for sure the fan's running, right?
Well, it's either the fan or the whole engine, but then it quit, like, within 30 seconds.
From what I understand, the cooling fans will run after the car is shut off.
Right.
And they'll operate for some period of time and then shut down. And that's normal operation, correct?
It is.
But I never done it before, though. I had the car for 4 years now.
Okay.
The thing that concerns me is the, overflow or what...
Coolant jug.
Yeah, the coolant jug that you're checking, that's low. I mean, are you seeing a leak on the ground or anything like that?
No, it's in my garage. No leaks.
Okay. Well, here's what happens. We're transferring water from the engine to the overflow jug, okay? So when the engine gets hot, it spits some coolant into the overflow jug. When you shut it off at night, it's supposed to suck what it pushed in there. It's supposed to suck back out. So therefore, your cooling system is full no matter if it's hot or it's cold, okay? You finding it down low indicates to me there might not be a full system. Mm-hmm. And if there's not a full system, then we need to finish the job. Because putting it in the coolant overflow jug, it might take you a month to refill that cooling system. Mm-hmm. It's going to take some time. I would much rather just have the car in front of me, take the radiator cap off when it's cool, and just go ahead and look at that. How many miles are on your Enclave?
75,000.
Okay. So do you have a garage that you go to that you trust?
I've been taking it, well, really, I never have any problems. I've been taking it just for oil changes to the dealership.
Okay, all right. Well, you can take it really anywhere you want, but I would say to them that you want them to analyze your cooling system. You want to tell them you've got the fans running in the middle of the winter and the cold days. You've got the fans that are cycling or that's staying on for 30 seconds or maybe a minute, but they're shutting off, which is an important thing because the relay's not stuck. If the relay was stuck, the fan would run forever. It would run your battery down, and the next morning you would be dead. The car wouldn't start. So the good thing is it's coming on, and something is seeing okay and shutting it off. That's a good news. So I would think that if you told them what you told me, then ask them, what's your diagnostic charge? Now, Andy, she's standing in front of you. What diagnostic charge are you going to quote her?
I would say she would pay anywhere between maybe 40 and 60 or 40 and 70.
Okay. But if you took the cap off of it and found it was low, then we have to fill it up and pressure test it to see where that coolant went.
Yeah.
At the very minimum, we're going to probably put a radiator cap on it because the radiator cap is an integral part of hot water going out, cold water coming in. So a radiator cap, but at 75,000 miles, she could be due for a coolant change as well. So this may turn into a cooling system pressure test and flush and a radiator cap.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden you're up to $100 or more.
Oh, more than that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to drop your diagnostic a little bit because if we're going to go into the cooling system and it's dirty, then a flush is going to be checking the radiator cap and all that and pressure test. So I was kind of taking her 40 to 60, and rolling it into a flush, so to speak. But the diagnostic process, I agree. It's just going to be $40, $50. Mm-hmm. To pressure test it, check the coolant to see if it's 40 below zero, and to look for leaks, and then maybe replace the cap.
Yeah, I would definitely, get it looked at, have somebody take a look at it. Sometimes, too, you don't see leaks on the ground because you have a plastic undercarriage or splash shield underneath the car that covers a majority of the underside of the car, so you wouldn't see it. Maybe it would be caught on that instead of dripping on your garage floor. So I don't know if your vehicle has one of those. Most of them do nowadays, but that could be why you're not seeing a leak on the ground, too.
I think the most troubling thing of what Julie's saying is we expect this to happen in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
This is very unusual for the 40 degrees weather we've been having.
And I think she would know if it was dieseling and the whole engine was running. It's a whole different. I mean, it sounds a lot louder, and she wasn't sure, but I doubt that would be what it is.
Well, she could do this. She could pull into her garage or pull in front of her garage. She could pop the hood, open it up, and then she could shut the car off and then get out and look. And if the fan belts are moving, then she's right. And if that's the case, then we have an ignition switch or a start relay, or we have something going on electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's going to be the diagnosis of 75 to 125 to figure that out. And then there's going to be a part and a labor to replace the part. That would typically be something either with the ignition lock assembly or ignition switch.
Yeah. So just verify that as you shut it off that the belts are not moving and the engine is not running. If they're not moving, then it is more than likely a cooling fan that's still running. But if they are, then it's a whole separate issue.
And the cooling fan running, she should see that running. She should see it and hear it. And if she put her hand behind it, 6-10 inches behind it, she'll feel the air moving.
Yeah, and that's typically right in the front, almost by the grill.
Right. It's on the radiator, and it's between the radiator and the engine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where your cooling fans are going to be. And, Julie, you could have two of them. So it's not uncommon for you to have two fans. And so if one of them's running, that makes a difference too, because one of them's on the air conditioning side typically and one of them's on the cooling system side typically. So that would have to be diagnosed if it was the AC fan that comes on yeah. when you apply air conditioning.
And you almost kind of got to stick your head in there and then look back because of the fan shroud. And, you know, it's going to be covering up or stand at the passenger side and look towards the radiator.
What part of town do you live in, Julie?
I live actually closer to you guys because it's Happy Valley and 55th Avenue.
Okay, we're clear down in South Tempe. So I'm sorry that Julie, I would prefer that I help people out as opposed to just trying to redirect everybody to my shop. But if you're at Deer Valley and 55th, then Action Auto, which is on Deer Valley and I-17, would be your closest place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
okay.
And it's okay for you to go in there and say, I'm a referral from Mark Salem. Mark Salem, me, I don't get any money. I'm not sending them to you and they're paying me. That doesn't happen. You would just go in there and say, I'm a new customer and I'm here as a suggestion with Mark Salem and this is what I want to show you. That fan, when I turn off my car, that fan continues to run for 30 seconds to 2 minutes.
Yeah, and then you also found the overflow low.
1 minute.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good part too. So
just mention both of those.
All righty, Julie.
All righty. Well, thank you so much. I figured I drove it for 7 miles, and I thought, no, this is not right.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
And that's troublesome right there, but she doesn't have that many miles on it. So.
No. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, good luck to you, Julie. Good luck. All righty, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. And I want to tell you real quick about automatic transmission exchange. If you drive down Washington Street near 40th, you're going to see automatic transmission exchange, and he's been there since 1968. Well, you don't work on transmissions since 1968 and do a bad job and rip off people. It's because you can fix transmissions. So if you live in Phoenix and you're having a transmission problem, then stop by automatic transmission exchange, 40th Street in Washington. And they'll take a drive for you with you for free if you can duplicate the problem. That's kind of important, duplication of the problem. Learn how to do that. Stop by Automatic Transmission Exchange. Well, welcome back, everybody. For 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, we got 26 minutes of show left, and we've got one caller on the line, Steve. And so if you'd like to join us, we have four open lines, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You can call in. Gil will answer the phone. He'll put you on hold. We'll get to you just as quickly as he can. Hang tight, Steve. Give me about 15 seconds. Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. And you'll notice a common theme with the shops of Mark Salem's Best Shops. They've all been around a long time. Harker's has been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen own and operate Larry Harker's Automotive. And Ellen works the front counter and Bob is in charge of the shop. And it's a really good pair to draw to because Ellen does a good job up in the front side and Bob helps the technicians diagnose and repair cars. So no matter auto electrical work, brake services, automotive emissions, vehicle maintenance, diagnosis, emissions test, all that stuff. But Bob's one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. So if you've got one of those problems that nobody else can fix, then you really do belong at Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Steve, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I've got a 1994 Nissan pickup truck, hard body V21. It's a deluxe version with the V6, it's 5-speed. Questions I've got are around the steering system. When I bought it about a year ago, the steering, front steering, felt loose. It is power steering,
okay,
but it seemed to have a mind of its own. You can't drive it down straight down the road. It kind of veers. So what I did was I had the front suspension rebuilt at a shop I trust. Everything that moves in the front suspension was replaced except for the control arm bushings. After the alignment, they mentioned that on that truck, the way the alignment is done is with shims on the pivot for the control arms, and one of the settings could not be
adjusted
perfectly set because of its run out of shims to remove.
Okay.
This suspension is better, but it still has the wandering problem.
Okay.
Their thought was the steering box.
Okay. Well, I think what you do is you say to them, if you think it's a steering box and it's and it doesn't fix anything, then what are we going to do then? Who's going to pay for that? Are you going to take the steering box back out? Because you, every shop that knows their stuff is going to sit down firm on their diagnosis. So maybe is something that's not allowed at my shop. We don't do maybe. But if we do maybe, then the customer has to agree to the maybe guess. Here's I got a couple questions for you, okay? Did it change anything with your original symptom of the truck wandering and having a mind of its own? Did it change anything?
As far as the wandering, no. As far as the overall tightness, it seemed to improve the tightness. Plus, I replaced the shocks at the same time, which were original from 1993.
All right.
Is this your daily driver?
No, it's just a periodic weekend runabout.
Okay, the reason I ask is just sometimes it's a 1994, right?
Yeah.
We sometimes have customers who, when they drive, I mean, what year is your other car that you drive?
I've got an 06 Tundra that a couple hundred thousand miles still drives like a brand new truck.
Yeah, okay. We see people that have this kind of an issue. Not saying that there's not anything wrong. I'm just saying that we do see this. If it's not a daily driver, they get in something that's, you know, the 94 truck, and they're like, whoa, the steering's all over the place, or this doesn't drive like I think it should. But really, sometimes there's nothing wrong. That's just how they drove or handled back in the day. So we see that from time to time.
It's a Fred Flintstone stone-driven car with four tires that are stone versus a Microsoft Windows 10 car.
Yeah.
It's a different. Let me just ask you some questions, okay? I just need answers from you. We haven't changed anything at all. Do you have any clunking when you stop abruptly or take off abruptly in the front end?
No.
All right. So I'm going to tell you how to diagnose it yourself, and you really should have called me before. How much did that front-end rebuild cost you with the shocks and all?
About $900 out of pocket.
And you notice this is the deal. Guys already said, well, I needed it anyway. Women don't say that. Women say, oh, wait a minute. You didn't fix
it. We're way smarter.
That's right. But the guy, oh, I need it anyway. So you spent $900 on your guess, and basically nothing happened. But here, I'm going to tell you how you figure it out yourself.
1 minute.
I need you to go outside and pop the hood of the truck and start it up and just set the parking brake and just sit there. You're going to have somebody get inside and wiggle the steering wheel left and right a couple of inches. You're going to go put your hand on the driver's front tire about the 9 o'clock position, and you're going to watch the steering wheel, and with your hand, you're going to make sure the steering wheel is completely synchronized with the driver's tire. Then you're going to move to the passenger side. What?
Is this with the engine running and the power steering active or with the engine off?
You can do it either way.
Okay.
Doesn't make any difference. But you can do it both ways if you want. You're going to go to the passenger side and do the same thing. Now, if there is play, then you're going to start at the steering shaft that comes through the firewall, and you're going to go to the power steering box. Now, there's an input shaft on the power steering box, and there's an output shaft on the power steering box. And if you don't turn the steering wheel more than 2 inches one way or another, you can put your hands down there on the bottom part called the pitman arm, and you can touch that and watch the steering shaft, because that's what we do. So all we're looking for is play, and all we're doing is using our eyes and our hand. So if you've got a steering box problem, why wouldn't we adjust the steering box?
Well, you beat me to it. Back in the days when I was working on cars, I did. I had a 67 Camaro. I adjusted the steering box. Your circulating ball was not that big of a deal. And the shop said, no, you can't adjust these. You've got to replace them.
Okay. So, well, if there's an adjustment there, then they're wrong, huh? But if there is no adjustment there, then they're right. But it doesn't make any difference. If I've got my hand on the input shaft and I've got my left hand on the pitman arm, I can sure feel if they're moving in synchronization. So if they are, fine. Then why would we replace the steering box?
Got it.
So,
okay.
And really, the steering wheel has to be firmly connected to both front tires, and they have to move in synchronization. I don't know about the wandering part. But you put me on this steering box issue and these lower control arms. If you have bad lower control arms, you're going to have a clunk on an abrupt stop, and you're going to have a clunk when you take off. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I asked about the control arm bushings if they were even needed, and they said no, they were nice and tight, and they didn't feel any play in them when they had the suspension apart.
But they can't get one of them. You've got some adjustment that can't come apart and adjust any further. Did you say that was part of the lower control arms when you adjust the lower control arms?
That was more of a non-answer shrug of the shoulders.
Okay. Well, the fact of the matter is if you got an eccentric, an egg-shaped adjustment, that's part of the alignment. So if you can't get one of those in, then I really think we need to focus on the problem. The problem is that you're wandering. So we start with an alignment from a gray-haired guy, and we don't plug it into a computer, and the computer goes, oh, it's okay. That's a problem. Because the computer's looking parameters that are about 36 inches wide. I think most gray-haired guys, their parameters are about 2 inches wide. So we're going to get your front end dialed in. We're going to get both front wheels straight ahead, and we're going to have about 1 degree in on each side. And we're going to take care of caster and camber, because you're going to pull to the positive side of caster, and you're going to pull to the negative side of camber. So if we have so much positive camber and we're still in the green zone, then, okay, that's the reason why we're wandering is right there. Why don't we pull that back a little bit? We can still stay in the green zone, but we don't need that much camber. That's what I'm talking about. You have to find somebody who's experienced, but we're just going to stick. We're not going to do any more guessing. We're not going to do the lower control arms. We're not going to do any more of that. We're going to focus on the wandering part. Now, last but not least, you follow the truck as somebody else drives it, and let's make sure the butt end of that truck isn't wandering. And as it goes left and right, it makes you feel like the front end's doing the same thing. So you could have a bushing on the leaf springs on the back of that truck that's gone, and there is no noise associated with that. Or let me change that. There's not normally noise associated with that. But as you drive down the road and somebody in your truck kind of just swings to the left within their own lane, they kind of go left and they go right, and you see the back end of that truck swaying back and forth, we always know that the rear steers the front. So I would also be looking at the rear. I got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take more calls, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. It's 45 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. We're done at noon, so if you'd like to join us, there's still time, 602-508-0960. Nick, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
89 Ford, half-ton pickup, manual transmission, 302. It pings. I took it to the dealership, left it there for a week while I was on vacation, and I asked them, first, do you have a computer that you can hook up to it while you take it out on a road test? Oh, yeah, we can do that. I come back, and they had a $75 charge, and they said, yeah, it's fixed. And I took off out of the dealership and had no guts at all. What they did was retard the timing.
Yeah, 1 and 1 equals 2. So you went in there with a different power level as you did before. Is the ping gone?
No.
Okay.
If I put the timing back to factory spec, which is 12 degrees, it pinged.
Okay. Is there any other reason why it would ping?
Even with premium.
Okay. Is there any other reason why it would ping?
Well, that's what I'm asking you.
Okay. All right.
That's why he's calling you.
Well, he doesn't know everything.
No. I was asking him those questions not to show off my talents, but to see what they told him.
Oh, okay.
Okay, is there any other reason?
Yeah.
If it's running lean and it's not getting enough fuel, then it's going to ping. If it's built up with carbon, it's going to ping. If the EGR is not working, or the EGR's passageway, which is one is vacuum and one exhaust, if that's plugged up, then it's going to ping. And he has an electronic ignition in that. And he has a module on the fender. And it's got a yellow grommet or a blue grommet or a variety of other colored grommets. And those can get out of whack. So by retarding the timing, they tried to fix the ping. That's troublesome. So then we also want to look at the timing chain on this thing.
I don't think that's us.
Yeah.
It's
okay. We want to look at the timing chain on this thing because we want to make sure that it's good and tight.
Yeah, it is.
And how did you check it?
Timing light.
No. No, that's not what I meant. You have to get underneath the truck and put a big old bar on the front of that crankshaft bolt. And you have to rock it clockwise about 3 or 4 inches, and then you go counterclockwise at about 3 or 4 inches, and you're going to be able to feel the slop. The question is are you going to be able to tell which is too much and which is normal? Because that bottom pulley is going to rotate the camshaft above it, and if there's a bunch of slop, then you're going to feel it.
I understand that. But if you got a timing light on there, that tells you when there's a lot of slack.
How does that do that?
Because your timing light, your mark will move all over the place.
No, that's not true. Because when your motor's running, there's a slack side of the chain and a drive side of the chain. And the drive side of the chain is running the camshaft, so your mark's not going to move. And you're, and if, in fact, that is the truth, I've never seen that in 39 years.
When you rev the engine up and back?
That's not a valid test. I'm just telling you that. It's just not a valid test. So the test to find out if the timing chain's got slack is exactly what I, and every gray-haired guy knows that. So all I'm saying to you is I'm giving you alternatives. You know, you need to find out if the hydrocarbons are real high and the CO is real low, and that'll tell you if it's running lean. But somebody's going to have to check it more idle, because idle is the idle circuit, and then cruise is the cruise circuit. So you can't very well test it when it's pinging, or you can't test it when it's not pinging. So that's why we're going to, you know, put it on a dyno, or we're going to drive it down the road, or we're going to do something to check it in the run mode or in the cruise mode. So
when do you think that a Ford dealership would be able to diagnose that?
You're asking me a question I don't have a prayer in hell of answering.
Depends on the technician.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, if they gave it to a guy fresh out of Ford school, probably not.
Yeah.
But if they gave it to somebody who's been there for 40 years, then yeah.
The kid, either he had three whiskers or he had gray hair. And that's all there is to it.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of new technicians don't have a clue.
Go ahead.
Either expert at your vehicle. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you. There's you bring up a real sore spot with me, and so I'm going to go ahead and forgive me, but I'm going to vent. I don't hire Ford-only technicians because that's all they know. They don't have a fundamental knowledge about spark and fuel and tailpipe emissions that include from an Acura to a Mercury Zephyr and everything in between. I remember hiring a guy from Chrysler who did nothing but air conditioning work who assured me he could do anything. He lasted 2 weeks, and I didn't say goodbye. We gave him stuff he didn't even have a clue. So when you start in the independent market where we do from Acuras to Mercury Zephyrs and we do pickups and diesels and all that kind of stuff, we have a fundamental knowledge that it appears to me is missing on somebody who just works on, give me the name of a toaster. You know, a Frigidaire refrigerator, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Think of a toaster.
Like
KitchenAid or one brand.
Exactly.
They know KitchenAid or whatever the brand is in and out, but they don't.
I completely agree.
Okay. Where do you live?
15th Street Northern.
Well, then, I would either go to 25th Street Auto, which is 25th and Indian School. Billy's there. I'll bet you... With 10-to-1 odds, Billy can fix this. I'll bet you he can diagnose it. Whether you want to pay for the fix is not. And then if you go north of there, Glendale, 12th Street in Glendale.
Oh, 12th Street.
Yeah,
okay.
He would be a good guy. And I know he could fix it. Kurtz is I-17 in Bell. He could fix it. Tom at I-17 in Deer Valley. He could fix it. These are all gray-haired guys. Mm-hmm. These guys have had their butts kicked when we were in the 60s and 70s, and we've been through the transition of carburetors to fuel injection. So, yeah, we have a fundamental knowledge that few have. Let me not say
too much. People Billy down there, and they have great success.
Yeah, they do good work. Mm-hmm.
So he always makes me proud to be my friend. He's a good Christian man. He's a drag racer, and he has fundamental knowledge, and he's got gray hair. You know what? Billy even has gray nose hair.
Oh, stop. Look who's talking.
Too much information. Talk about unneeded information in a phone call.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be the top of the list.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Hey, come on. I made you laugh. And you know what else?
Is that the point?
Yeah, that's the point. There's three levels of gray hair.
Oh, we don't even want to hear.
It's head.
Oh, come on.
It's nose. And
chest.
It's ears.
Chest.
Ears.
Oh, ears.
Ears.
Oh,
that's
Lord.
Right.
Chop their heads off.
Yeah.
We're about ready to chop his head off, right?
So you look for nose, ear, and hair.
So when you go in, Nick, you'll have to inspect the nose hair just to make sure everybody's on the up and up. You know, that's the way we're testing these days. Oh man.
I send people there because when I go in, they're billing, and I start to yakety-yakety because we're about the same age.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we're killing each other's time.
Yeah. You know what, though? Billy's a good guy, and he doesn't mind that. And I've got customers like that, that they'll come in, and they'll, and, you know, I'll talk as long as they want to talk. Because
and longer.
Luke, and longer. So anyway, I was saying, I'll talk as, well, I have customers like Lou Wilmont. And a lot of other people that have 2- and 3- and 4-digit customer numbers. And so when they come in, then it's a different story than somebody that walks in that's never been in before,
right,
who wants to bend my ear. I'm going to bend his for twice as long as he's going to bend mine.
Oh, yeah. That's about normal.
I think that's all across the board. It doesn't really matter the customer number. Let's be honest.
So you object when I sit in the lobby in the mornings and I'm sitting there talking with everybody in there.
When their car's been dead for an hour and they're wanting to go to their next appointment, yeah, that's kind of...
They're pushing on the front door.
No, wait.
We're just teasing you.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, we are.
Okay. All right. Well, we have 4 more minutes of the show, and I think I'm going to talk about both of you for the 4 minutes.
We got to go to Nordstrom.
Yeah. Oh, we got to leave. Yeah.
You know what she said? She said, I think we were talking to Julie. Wasn't it Julie?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And Andy goes, she should just go to Nordstrom and forget her car.
She'll feel better.
This is calls for a little bit of retail therapy.
All right. Well, and then most of us guys that have wives that shop at Nordstrom, we shop at Target.
Ooh, Target's awesome.
What are you talking about? And what's the name of that
we
place?
We shop at Walmart, too. Don't worry about it.
What's the name of the place that has all the hunting stuff and all that kind
like
of stuff?
Like Bass Pro or Sportsman?
Yeah, that's where we shop.
Really?
That's where we buy our clothes.
You walk
that's
in. Right.
Let's go find some boots.
And when was the last time you shopped for your clothes? If you want to get into this, go ahead, because we got way much more ammunition. On you.
I'll tell you when the last time I ordered a whole bunch of Levi's on the internet.
On the internet.
Yeah.
Only because you know your size.
Yeah.
I used to have to go and buy your clothes. You'd try them on. They wouldn't fit. We'd return them. This was before the internet, you know?
Yeah.
It was just a pain.
Yeah, I know.
I did that for way too many years.
I was working, making money while you were saving me time.
How long have we been working together?
You're saving me time.
Let me ask you a question. How many times has your fingernails been dirty working on your own car?
Never.
Okay. Hey, your lawnmower starts first time, your weed whacker starts first
That's
time, your
Andy
blower.
Didn't scare him.
Andy is one of our technicians. He didn't get your pole and mower, or your pole and weed whacker working.
Only because she didn't bring it down here.
That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was broken.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
Are you done?
No, not yet. We better say goodbye to anybody who's listening because we're probably never going to be invited back.
Yeah, you might as well.
Just call us at the shop if you want to talk to us. We're there all the time.
Hey, Gil, do we have any callers left?
Oh, we do not.
And we only have 1 minute, so that's probably not enough time anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enough time to roast you, but not enough time for a caller.
That's fine. What's the hardest part of steering the ship, assistant co-pilot?
There's dealing with you being on the top.
Yeah, there you go.
It's good. We got great guys.
Well, we do. But I've also, I'm responsible for the path that got us here.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm only hoping that you and your brother find some benefit in following the path as opposed to deviating from it and doing something like changing the name or something like that. All right, next week we're going to start with Swap Shop Phoenix, and we start at 9 o'clock, and that's where you can buy, sell, trade, dump your junk, whatever you want to do. It's modeled after an old radio show that was in the 70s and the 80s on another station, and it was very popular. So it's kind of like a garage sale radio show. So we do that at 9, and then at 10 o'clock to noon, you'll have me from now on, Mark Salem. I'm an ASE Master Tech, and I'll be alone. And you don't need to worry about that we have a
cackling hens in the background.
You said it, I didn't. So this is the end of the cackling hens, and you can say goodbye to them. Goodbye, everybody. We'll see you next week. God bless you. Drive safe.